Hey everybody, we're back again with some movie bonfire, and it's just Bracken and I today. Yep. I don't know what's up with Zach. He's working too hard or something.
Yeah, well, he's doing something.
So I'm happy to say that we made it through our third installment of the Ripley ad. And guess what? I found out there's another one. And guess who plays Ripley?
No.
The guy from Easy Rider. What's his name? The 60s guy. He's famous. Easy Rider. Dennis Hopper.
Are you kidding me?
I found this out in the weekend. My brother's like, well, did you watch so-and-so, so-and-so? And I'm like,
there's another one?
I don't want to watch another one.
No.
So maybe we'll have to look that one up and have to have an addendum to our Ripley ad, which would be right because that would mean four.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Tell us about this movie. When did it come out? I'd never heard of this movie. I don't know. I knew nothing about it.
Well, this is 2005. This is 3 years after Ripley's Game came out with Malkovich.
Uh-huh.
And I think the first one was 1996, I think, if I'm not mistaken. So we've got, you know, the first one, which
1996 to 2005 for the third? Okay.
Yeah. So we've got like a 9-year gap here and like 3 years between the last two movies. So it kind of makes me think that this was kind of hurried where they're like,
yeah,
wow, the last one actually made a little bit of money. You know, we can score some of this off this.
But the interesting thing is this third movie is chronologically, it seems that it's in the middle of the first two. But
yes.
That's also not true anyway either because this movie is set in current day, it would seem.
Oh yeah.
So you can't. I don't know what Malkovich's Ripley movie was. Not maybe that was in current day too. So I don't know. There's a little bit of, you can tell that in this movie he's starting to become this art forger is what I think that character becomes the, you know, that's his big thing. He forges art and this, yeah. I think this is the first time, maybe in the novels that he does it.
Oh,
so,
okay.
But I don't. I'm just guessing. I didn't read the novels, so I don't know.
Yeah. Patricia Highsmith, we're sorry. We just watched the movies. Yeah, it seems like, I think you're right. It seemed to me like the first one was clearly in the 50s or whatever.
Yeah.
And then after that, it was just like modern times.
Yeah.
So that's not really helpful at all to us.
But it was a little confusing because I was trying to place the characters and place Ripley in context of the Malkovich Ripley.
Yeah.
And I could tell that this Ripley is not as suave.
Definitely.
As Malkovich, a little bit more towards the earlier Tom Ripley from The Talented Mr. Ripley, a lot more improvisation, a lot more seat of his pants type stuff, kind of lucking out of things, which I kind of liked. But what did you think of the character this actor who played Ripley in this version, Barry Pepper?
Oh yeah, Barry Pepper.
Yeah.
To me, I was kind of, this is the only one where I really felt like the Ripley character wasn't done justice in this movie.
Yeah.
Because to me, I mean, this Barry Pepper guy, he doesn't really show a whole lot of range in the character at all. It's like, I'm Ripley, I improvise, this is what I do. I'm never scared, I'm never mad, I'm never angry. You know, it's like,
I'm totally agreeing with you. That guy has an interesting look about him. His face is a little interesting. He's sort of a muscular dude. But can he act? I don't know. He's just kind of walking through with his like stringy blonde hair. And for the life of me, he falls in love with this French chick who basically owns a, I don't know what you call it. It's bigger than a castle. Mm-hmm. This is like, apparently this is the place that becomes Ripley's domain in the third movie because it's this gigantic, it's amazing how they got this thing to film. But anyway, the point what I'm trying to make is I don't know what she sees in the dude. She basically sees him when he's trying to steal his her wallet out of her car.
Yeah.
And somehow, some way, she's attracted to this guy, which I have no idea. I don't know where they're coming from.
Yeah, that was kind of weird how they met. I mean, although to me, that was like one of the few things that I thought was plausible because I could see Ripley like in the middle of this devious act because he needs some cash and then being like, oh, you know, I was just here making sure you're okay, you know? But yeah, I didn't really, I don't know, it's like I couldn't really care about Ripley in this one.
Yeah.
It's like, I didn't even really care if he got caught. Like, I was kind of hoping for it, but I knew he wouldn't.
You know? All right, well, we should give him the basic setup. The basic setup is Ripley is friends with this artist who, in a fit of jealous rage, kills himself by running himself into a tree.
Yep.
And this artist is about to become really big. His new paintings are about to be released, and the museums are going to buy it. Anyway, he kills himself on the night of his big release party, and... So Ripley gets the big idea that instead of letting this whole cash cow going to the skids, he's going to basically impersonate this. I forgot the artist's name.
DeWatt,
something like that.
Yeah.
And it just so happens that the DeWatt's friend, who's part of this, reluctantly part of this scheme, can actually paint as well. So now they have Ripley to play the part of DeWatt when he has to be in public, and then if they need some more work out of DeWatt, this friend is going to paint it too.
Yeah.
And then, so it seems like it's a good plan because it's DeWatt's an asshole anyway. But what happens is that one of the, some guy, it's actually played by Willem Dafoe from Ohio, is a collector of this DeWatt, and he starts to notice that these paintings are forgeries, and then then how do we deal with this guy who's basically asking questions? And you could probably guess how Willem Dafoe gets dispatched in this movie, and it just gets worse and worse.
Escalates out of control. So two things that I thought were pretty hokey. Number one, the fact that they were all like, oh, the artist is dead, now his paintings will never sell. Like, what? What are you talking about?
Yeah, I know.
People never buy stuff until the artist is dead.
Exactly.
I mean, the fact, if they marketed, this guy just died in a car crash yesterday, people would be like, oh man, these are the last of these paintings? This is going to be worth something. But I thought that was implausible. Then the number two thing that
These are negative things? That was implausible that the art would sell?
Yeah, like the whole premise of most of the movie, I thought was based on some shoddy logic.
Yeah. I mean, if he's a good artist, I mean, I don't know. I think that's a good storyline, you know? Like, it's like the day that he becomes this famous artist, he kills himself. So that art would probably, like, skyrocket in value.
Yeah, you would think.
So there's a nice story behind it.
Yeah,
well, story, but a dramatic story anyway.
And what was the other thing I was thinking that was really, really hokey? Oh, how, like, the chick basically seduces, like, this guy's friend.
Uh-huh.
Or she seduces him into painting these paintings, right? And they look really freaking similar, but if you notice, like, the arguments that William Dafoe makes,
yeah,
they're like, well, he hasn't used fuchsia blue since his painting, you never go back to it.
That was way too, like, stupid. Like, who cares? That doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, exactly. That's
you could argue against that in a second. Yeah, it was a little convenient that they were, that hottie girlfriend who basically turned down DeWatt and caused him to go off in his fit of suicide.
Yeah.
Has enough, you know, she just sticks with it just for the money. I don't know. These people are all slimes. I kind of did like the other guy who's the money man. What's his name? He's a famous gay guy. I don't know his name, but he's been in a lot of movies. He always plays like a nervous gay guy. What's his name? I don't know.
I can't remember.
He was okay.
The tall, thin British dude.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Somebody's going to kill me for not knowing that guy's name. he was okay. I mean, I think he ran out of things to do, but I liked him as an interesting character. The thing that, let me ask you this one. This is the one that annoyed me throughout the movie, but then there's a payoff on it. And maybe I could be convinced. Basically, Ripley picks up on this little hottie French chick early on in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he's doing all this underhanded shit, basically, with his buddies. And for some reason, this French woman is along for the ride, but she conveniently just falls asleep whenever they're doing any of their bad stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it starts off, they're basically, they bury a guy, they bury DeWatt, or no, they put him in a freezer.
Freezer, yep.
And she's just in the back, snoozing away. Apparently oblivious to all this horrible shit they're up to. Okay, so, and then I'm like, and in the meantime, they're falling in love. So you're like, who are you falling in love with? This guy's a slime ball.
Yeah.
But as you realize throughout, I think the payoff in the end, which I'll give away, is that she really knows what's going on, and she's been playing it the whole time, just not revealing it. So, I don't know. I mean, I think that was the payoff at the end, when they get married, and she's basically gives it up, like, I know what you guys are up to, and I'm still hip with it, and this is what I like about you, or some kind of crazy logic like that.
She moves the body, right, when he's about to get caught, he's like, oh crap, the jig is up, and the body's already gone, and it was her that moved it.
I can see that playing a lot better in a novel than in the movie, because it's so obvious in a movie that, you know, come on, they're speeding down the road, she's not sleeping, come on.
And to me, it seems like if she was going to be in on it, she would have been in on it from the beginning,
yeah.
You know what I mean? You don't, like, pretend that you're not in on it.
Yeah. I think it's just like, I think it's supposed to be, and maybe it's in the part three, in the Malkovich one, is that she knows that Ripley is this underhanded, scary person, but she doesn't ever want to be, like, intimately involved with that world.
Oh, like, directly?
Like, yeah, like she knows what he does, but she's too uppity or too high to be involved in it. But when she can help, she'll help out, because she does help him.
Yeah.
Like, there's a couple times where she saves his butt.
Yeah.
And you're like, why is she doing that? Obviously, she knows, and she's just helping him.
Yeah, I don't. To me, what really got lost in here is that one, the love between those two was never genuine for me, or at least it wasn't portrayed genuinely with the acting.
I totally agree with that. No chemistry between those two. I didn't think. Yeah. How could you have chemistry with Barry Pepper anyway? That guy's basically blank.
Exactly. So, yeah, so I didn't buy that. So because that wasn't there, that sort of let the other stuff fall apart. Like, why would she help him? Because I haven't seen this, like, deep, intimate relationship they keep talking about that I don't really see. So, I don't know. It seemed a little shoddy to me. But the nice thing is I must have missed all these clues along the way, because I still believed at the end that she wasn't.
Oh, really? Well, the one that convinced me was that Willem Dafoe has a – is it Willem or William? I think it's Willem. Willem, okay. Yeah. He has a toupee, and when he kills his character, the toupee flies off, and he has these giant poodles.
Yeah.
And the poodles take the toupee, and that's like, you know, oh, well, that toupee's going to come up later as some kind of evidence. And it does come up later, but the French chick, I don't know her name, she hides it from the detective. So you know, like, why is she grabbing that toupee? Wouldn't she be like, hey, poodle, why do you have that toupee in your mouth? If she was obviously oblivious, but she knows something's a jig.
Okay.
So she throws that toupee in the garbage can before the detective can notice it. And that's when I knew. I was like, well, she's in on this jig.
See,
I was not as blown away at the end when she puts the ring, at the end, it's basically you reveal a ring that tells you that she knows, has been known the whole thing, and there's a dead body buried in the garden, and blah, blah, blah. So, to me, I wasn't really surprised at the end.
Okay, see, I just saw that as, she never really looked at the toupee, so I just thought she thought it was like a dog toy and then just threw it away.
You know what I think it has to do with? I watched this movie in two parts, and I think when I had a chance to think about it after I turned it off, like, sometimes when you ever get that feeling, like, when you're in a movie, or if you have that feeling where you watch a movie in two parts, before you come back to the second part, you've had a chance to digest what you've seen in the first part and the clues that you've seen. So I think I remember when I came to work, I was like, obviously she knows what, because I said I didn't watch it all. And I said to you, obviously she knows what's up. And I saw your face like, how does he know that?
Yeah.
But because I must have been stewing on it on my way to work or something, because I thought about, well, in reality she would not be able to sleep through that mess, and she threw away she caught the wig toupee, and I was like, well, she knows what's up. That's why she's hanging with this dude. That's the thing that's attractive about him to her.
I gotcha.
But yeah, it's not really, it's not a good story. I mean, those two don't mean to be together. To me, I don't know what has he got? Yeah. I mean, he should be a little bit more slick if he's going to be attracted to her. I don't really know.
Yeah, it just seems so bland. Yeah. They're just like, okay, we hung out for a night, and now I'm madly in love with you, and you know what I mean? Like, what?
What did you think of the tomato theme?
The tomato theme.
Like, he's got tomatoes in it. Like, it starts off...
Oh, yeah.
It starts off, the credits are basically a tomato plant growing, and then he has tomato plants in his apartment.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, the end is the tomato plant. Yeah, like, Ripley Underground, what does that mean? It just means he buried someone. I don't really know.
Yeah, that's a really good question. Like, I always thought that the tomatoes, especially once... Wasn't it that when he buried the dude underneath the tomatoes that they actually flourished even more?
Yeah.
So it's almost like they're trying to say that, you know, the more he has buried, the more fruitful he becomes.
You know, I can see that.
Which, I don't know, but the thing is, it's kind of hokey. I mean, he ends up like, everyone's like, oh, look at those big tomatoes. There's some bodies under there. Let's look here.
I guess if you want to look at it in a metaphorical or some kind of, like, poetic sense, it's like you're right, the more shit he buries in the garden, the more flourishing that Ripley's life is going to be. And I guess you could, if you want to be poetic about it, you could say that. Because he's better off when he's doing his schemes rather than... He fails at being an actor. Like, he gets kicked out of acting school, although he lied to get in there.
Yeah.
But you don't really see him doing very well in his in his real life endeavors. He's always better off when he's trying to scam somebody or impersonate someone.
Yeah, definitely. That's what he's good at. Stick to what you know.
The other thing that disappointed me was the detective. That guy, I don't know. I don't know. It seemed like you had him. Just like the guy, detective in Ripley, Talented Mr. Ripley, it seems like you nailed him, and I don't understand how he can get out of it. It was all predicated by the fact that there was going to be a dead body in the garden, and when that didn't happen, I guess he was free, but still.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
I guess I just have a hard time with these detectives that automatically know what's going on, and they're just really suspicious of somebody. It's like, in real life, seriously, would you be that way? Would you be like, I have no reason to think this, but I hate you, and I'm suspicious of you.
Why is he allowed on the grounds of the palace on their wedding day? I have no idea, except for the father who's trying to, you know, that's just stupid. But that's part of the way I like part three, because it didn't have a detective. So, I like that. I mean, I don't think the detective, the thwarted detective in these books don't really get me. They need one that actually catches them.
Yeah.
I don't know.
One that's actually smart and be like, oh, hey, here's some evidence.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it's okay. I watched it, but it's so many.
It's not one I would watch again.
Yeah, I'm not going to recommend this one.
The whole, let's talk about the whole Ripley ad as a trilogy here. What do you think of this trilogy?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is they're very disconnected, and these movies stand alone, if you ask me. They're not really the same. They're not. You don't really need to have watched one or two or three, obviously, because you can watch them in different order. Mm-hmm. And I think they're disconnected because in these movies, the Ripleys, to me, are very different. This Ripley is different from Malkovich, and Malkovich is obviously very different from
Matt Damon.
Matt Damon's Ripley.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this one is not suave. He's not refined, really. He's more of a brute force Ripley. Just like a young guy. Malkovich is more refined and kind of like, you know, wimply. I don't really know how to. Just like kind of an intellectual asshole, kind of.
Yeah.
And then the first one is so gay and so enamored with Jude Law that's basically defines him in that first one.
Yeah.
Smart, but I don't know.
I think I would describe this as a steep hill where the first one's at the top. And the third one is at the bottom. I think it's just like, in the first one we get good character development, we get nice, meaty, you know, acting. And it's to me, I got really involved in Ripley's story then.
Yeah.
And then we're jarred into Malkovich land where, you know, Ripley's totally, totally different. I understand we're years in the future, but still.
Yeah, that's not the same guy. I don't care what you say.
Totally, yeah. And which, not that Malkovich was bad in that role, it just wasn't the same Ripley, like you were saying. Totally disconnected.
Yeah.
And then this third one, it's like, seriously, why?
I think they're just, you know, they're like, we got a little bit of a hot commodity with this character, and we're going to milk it. That's where I think this one's coming from. Like, yeah, we can get Willem Dafoe in there and, you know, and get a new hot guy, Barry Pepper. If he turned out to be hot then, I don't really know. He was in he looks like he should be in a war movie. Like, I think he was in, like, Saving Private Ryan is where I recognize his face from.
Oh, okay.
Like, he needs to be on the battlefield just basically getting blown up. That's where he needs to be, like, it's Transformers something, or G.I. Joe, something like that.
So I think, you know, we could wrap up this trilogy by saying, see the first one and then stop.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with that. I think that, just to put a point on that, in my opinion, I've never read these books, and I'm sorry if I offend Patricia Highsmith or whoever this person is. I don't think they're probably not that good. Maybe the first one's sort of good. But all this double crossing and crappity-crap, you jump out of the hoop at the lariat very last second, that just seems like crud to me. Maybe it works better in a... I hope it works better in a book, because you can, you know, explain the details a little bit better. But in this movie, and especially in... Even in the first one, he is so caught at the end of this movie, and he just, like, slivers his way out. Yeah. So unrealistic. But I don't know.
I'll give her one credit for her ability to make us root for the bad guy, at least in the first one.
True. How was I rooting for this guy? No, I don't really, not really.
The third one or the second one?
This one we just saw.
Oh, yeah.
Like, who cared about him?
No, I wanted him to get caught. I'm like, well, if he gets caught, maybe I'll get to see some emotion.
Yeah, maybe. Like, do something to that dude. All right. Well, I don't know. Stay tuned for our do you have anything else to say?
No, I think we're ready.
We're going to get back into our zombies. I don't know if we can come back to the Dennis Hopper version. I'm about rippled out right now. Maybe I will be after I see all this camp and mayhem. I'll be ready to see a good movie, but
I'll see if I can find it, and if I can find it, maybe if we're really bored sometime, and we got nothing else to do, and we're kind of feeling like masochistic, we might check it out.
I hope we can sneak some Paranormal Activity into this mix too, like as a real movie that we went to the theater to.
Oh, that
would be nice. So, if we can get Zach off his ass, away from his homework, maybe we can, go see a movie. All right. See you, man. See you guys.